Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective journey into motherhood. I am your host, Sally Kuria. We are coming to the end of this first season, which is a bittersweet moment for me. It's sad that, you know, the time has come to take a bit of a break, but I'm actually quite proud that I've completed an entire season. At the beginning of this, I honestly didn't think I'd be able to do this, like at least not for this long. But not only have I done it, I also have like some insane exciting ideas on how to grow this platform and offer so much more value to like you guys, the listeners. And all of it is actually even just stemming from the feedback that I've received so far. The season ending does not mean that Mama Tales is done. Nope. I still have so many stories to record and share. Actually, I have quite a few scheduled in the next couple of weeks. I just see it as taking a bit of time to take a breather, to rejuvenate, to reevaluate, and make sure that, more importantly, that this podcast grows with me and with you as the listeners, so that, you know, even the topics that are discussed and everything that happens on the platform makes a lot more sense to you and where you're at with your life right now. During this break, I'll be recording stories and also experimenting with other like content directions, which I'm itching to try. And I think I am excited for season two. I'm not entirely sure when it will be coming up, but definitely keep an eye on that on the socials. I'll be sharing once I have a definite date on when season two is coming. Anyways, to close things off, I have such an amazing, eye-opening and refreshing story to share. So our mama this episode is Nicole. So Nicole is a fellow podcaster. Yay. Her podcast is called Back to Basics by Ruby Mamas. On her podcast, she shares refreshing and honest conversations to redefine motherhood. And I think that's what I felt when we were, you know, just going through her journey. And I think we had such a long conversation, which was so beautiful and eye-opening, as I've said before. And just, you know, you're just left thinking, you know, just thinking to just question and really understand and trust what your body can do. So Nicole is, other than just being an amazing podcaster and a mom plus wife, she is a childbirth and pain management educator, and most importantly, such a sweet soul. So Nicole figured out her passion was in childbirth at such a young age and did not hesitate to follow it. So we had such a great conversation that's pretty long. So what I've done is split her story into two. So part one, we'll talk about her passion. That's everything around what being a childbirth educator even means and how she supports moms deliver babies into this world and everything around prenatal and postpartum care. In part two, we will now get into her own story and how she delivered her baby at home with her husband. This was such a profound conversation, which I think I've mentioned like for the umpteenth time, just because of just how, I don't know, it was just like melt in my heart kind of convo, which I truly, truly enjoyed. So let me just stop yapping about it and let us just jump into it. But before we do, please keep in mind these words. Pregnancy is a state of wellness. Let that sink in a little bit. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nicole Adera. I am 24 and I'm a childbirth educator and fear and pain management practitioner. And I have a 1-year-old soon. I got into pregnancy and birth stuff when I was like 19. Yeah. So basically I started planning for my baby's conception when I was 19. So that's how I got into birth work. And yeah, so I ended up here.
Wow. So actually, yeah, that's a very good place to start with, because I think at 19, definitely that was nowhere near my mind at all, other than the fact that I knew I wanted babies, but it was never how to get into that. So maybe just as you talk about what it is that you do with as a childbirth educator, you could just go back to that point of inception of where this kind of passion came in and how you trained yourself to be where you are now.
Like I was talking to my mom the other day, actually, and she was telling me that I I saw you know those movies where people are giving birth, basically, yeah, the whole dramatization and everything, when I was like 5 or 6. And she said I'd make my sister, like, we'd practice, we'd role play the whole doctor, like the whole birth thing. And I'd be yelling, push, push, push. But yeah, so I guess my obsession with birth started then. I'd spend a lot of time watching give birth. Like watching people give birth in the hospital made me uncomfortable. So I'd watch like animals. Like it would really be interesting to me. I'd be hanging out with my friends and I'd be watching, you know, animal birth videos.
Wow. So instead of watching actual people giving birth, you'd prefer watching animals do it?
Yeah, because when I'd watch like births in the hospital, it would get to a point where like I'd get like a tingling in my spine. So it'd make me really uncomfortable. I couldn't finish the video. Like I'd either skip through the pushing and whatever to when the baby comes, or just like skip through the whole thing. Just watching animal births made me feel so much more calm. Like it made more sense in my head somehow.
So then when did it turn legit? Then when did we move away from the animals to, to actual humans? Yeah.
One day I was on YouTube and I saw this woman giving birth in a forest by the stream. And I was like, oh my goodness, yes. I was like, yeah, this is how I want to give birth, basically. And I was like, this looks so peaceful and fun. And yeah, it made so much sense to me. Anyway, fast forward to 19. And I met my now husband. And, you know, I think from then we just knew we were it for each other, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, so somehow, like, babies just came into my field of thought. And yeah, and I had a very, like, difficult relationship with my parents. I think that was the motivation for me getting into birth, because I was like, you know what, if I want to change how I raise my children, or heal like the traumas from my growing up, it has to start from when I give birth. So I was like, sawa basi.
Yeah.
From now, I'm planning for when I'm gonna have my next baby. So I was like, okay, 3 years is good, because I'll be done with uni. And then, you know, I'll be fresh out of uni. It'll be a nice time to have a baby. I won't be too old. And then I won't have to juggle like work and everything, you know? So yeah, I started preparing. I did a lot of emotional work, a lot of mental healing. I took out my birth control, I think, just before I got pregnant. And the funny thing is we got married, but I had never intended on us getting married so soon. So me, my plan was we'd have the baby and then, you know, marriage will happen at some point or not. Like, I was really okay with either or. But yeah, so I think we're just sitting down one day and my husband was like, yeah, like this is where I want to be. I don't see myself changing my mind anytime soon. And we're like, yeah, so let's do this. So we planned, we went to the AG. It was really low key. And 2 months later, I got pregnant.
Wow.
And so in between these 3 years, I had been educating myself on all things birth, pregnancy, parenting. Like, I'd already established what kind of parent I wanted to be. It was just to get pregnant. That was all that's left. We got married and that's when I was like, okay, fine, now we can try. And then COVID happened. So I hadn't graduated yet, but I wasn't going to school. So I was like, this is pretty, like, things are working out perfectly so far. And yeah, so during my pregnancy, I did my childbirth education course. So I used that as my prenatal education. And then, yeah, so we were trying for a few months. It was so funny. I had this chemist I'd go to. Like, he'd go to a point where he would just like, yo, Nicole, I'm praying for you. Like, thanks. And then, yeah. And then, because I was buying pregnancy tests from him.
Yeah.
So he was just like, yeah, Nicole, I've been praying for you, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, thank you so much. And then I got pregnant, I actually went back to him. And I'm like, look, we're having a baby. It was so funny.
So, you know what's interesting you continue is that, at least from what I'm getting, your journey into understanding everything childbirth was fueled by your own desire and need to have like a fulfilling experience. Because in my mind, what I'd thought is that it was more outward facing, like you'd wanted to help more people at the very beginning. So I don't know if that's a very good interpretation, that you actually wanted to first see how you can do it yourself, and then the outside part of it came later. Is that
exactly
a good,
I think that was it. Yeah, because I saw that a lot of people either have, like, you know, issues with their parent, their father or their mother, or both. You know, and I had issues with both. Like, it's been very rough. And I saw that where, like, our issue started was from their growing up. So, like, logically, I was like, to change all of that, like, why not start off on, like, good, what's the word I'm looking for?
Good foundation.
Start off well.
No, okay.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so I was like, why not start the foundation well? And the foundation, like, logically to me was how I give birth, like, what my pregnancy would be like. And that's how I found out about physiological birth. I found out about the history and the origins of obstetric care. And I was like, this makes so much sense. Like, see the connections in how we were birthed and how our mothers were treated is affecting how we are now. And yeah, and I was like, okay, fine. Like, I guess this, like, I can't know this and not share it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I was like, okay, I guess this is my path. And then, yeah, it was convenient that I love birth. I love talking about birth. I love watching birth videos. And then, yeah, and podcasts. That's how I actually found podcasts as well.
Okay, going through birth
stories.
A follow-up question would be, you were your first client, yes?
Essentially, yes.
What does you being a childbirth educator entail?
Okay, so part of me being a childbirth educator is I work with women and educate them on how their bodies, like, are made to birth. All the connections from your brain to your throat to your cervix to your mind, all of that is connected to how you're going to birth and how your experience will probably be like. So my job is just to prepare you to know, just to get comfortable with your body. Because, you know, I can imagine, like, if you get pregnant and you don't know what's going on, like, what the purpose of each feeling is.
Yeah.
Like, you know how you were talking about the cramping, right? Yeah, so it's basically my role is to just, you know, get you comfortable, because imagine you're prepared for the cramping. It wouldn't be as scary, you know.
True. As opposed
to when when you're feeling that implantation cramping and you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, your mind can just jump to the worst things. Yeah, my job is to prepare you for what your body's going to do, what's going to happen after, especially because in our society right now, postpartum is so, like, neglected. And I'd say, like, that's the most transformative, or, like, the biggest adjustment, let me say that.
Yeah.
Going from, like, just being you to having a baby. But then it's not something that's focused on when you go to your OB, like, just general women's care. You're not taught about, like, herbs you should use to reduce bleeding. Like, let's say vaginal steaming, that's like an ancient practice that was used for women to help healing during postpartum. So it's like, there's been studies that have been done that show that if you do steaming, women who steam as opposed to women who don't steam have reduced bleeding quicker. So they're done, their uterus is back to normal by that 6-week checkup. And yeah, so it's just things like that, things that are going back to basics. Because at the end of the day, the hospital just showed up. Your body didn't just start giving birth when a doctor just, you know, happened upon women's reproductive organ.
Yeah,
no?
True.
People were giving birth. They were taking care of themselves. They're taking care of each other. They're taking care of their babies. And it's not that birth had, like, it's not that your body became broken all of a sudden, you know? It's all these things that were added in that are interrupting the natural, like, cycle of your body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because I think, and I felt this a lot during my own journey, because I didn't, first of all, I still, even just the mere thought of going for those monthly clinics when you're pregnant and waiting in line forever to just
hear
a heartbeat and then possibly see the, you know, but I feel like the second time around, I'd probably want to do something a little bit different if at all I can, you know, just sit with my guy and be like, okay, show me the ones I have to come for, you know, and then just be able to be in tune with my own body, because at this point in time, pregnancy is starting to feel like you're sick, right? That's why you need a doctor if you're sick.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you really
And that's like another part of my job. Yeah, just reinforcing that pregnancy is a state of wellness. There's so many things that have to go right in your body to align for you to be able to sustain this life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just things like going to a hospital, like there's no other reason people go to a hospital aside from when they're ill.
Yeah.
And these things, like, they're being planted in your brain. So instead of preparing for this life, you know, for 9 months, you're programming your brain to think that this thing, this sickness in it that it needs to remove.
Yeah.
You know, all these things like doing these blood tests. You know, you go to the hospital and then you end up, most people end up more worried than when they left.
What about this side where, you know, the hospital, fine, might not be the very best place to go, but it might calm a mother down to know that if anything goes wrong, there's a doctor there, right? So I think that's why a lot of people might go to the hospital. So like, what is your take on that side of just like, hey, but me, if anything goes wrong, I'd rather be with a doctor in a hospital admitted as opposed to trying to do this thing on my own elsewhere?
That's a good question. I feel like it's such deep work, because especially as women, like, you've been raised not to trust your body and trust your thoughts and your instincts, you know? Natural, if you're going through such a big experience, to want like this other person to tell you that everything's okay, that you're doing the right thing, you know? But like, I always ask, what if nothing goes wrong, you know? Why not back the other side? Like, just, you know, because you're not just going into this blindly. If you're eating right and you're exercising, you know, of course, sometimes things just happen, and that's why the hospital is there.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't stop someone from running just because they might break their leg, you know? What if, like, imagine your daughter wanted to go, like, be a motocross rider?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't tell her, you wouldn't be like, no, you're not going to do that. What if your bike, like, suddenly stops working, or your brakes stop working? I'm always like, you can't live in such fear. Otherwise, there's no point of you leaving the house, because you could die in the car. You could die on the way down the stairs. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things could go wrong. Like, life is not safe, but, you know, you just have to back yourself and just trust in the process. But it's a lot of work, just getting that, just changing that mindset.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot, because even me, when I was doing my home birth, I was like, what happened if everything wrong? What if you need, I don't know what. But it's like, first of all, you can call an ambulance. And, you know, there's hospitals quite everywhere. There's, most people live in like a close enough distance to a hospital that if you needed it, you could go, you know? But yeah, I think it's a lot of work, because even the whole system is built on the fact that they're telling you that your body is broken, you know? This baby is treated like an illness, like a disease, you know? But yeah, I just think, you know, it takes a lot of mental work, a lot of asking yourself questions, like finding out where all these fears have come from. Like, are they yours or they're someone else's? Like, that's a lot of the work that I do people.
Okay. And what would you say for the moms that you help out? Are they usually mostly first-time moms or moms who've done this before?
I think most of them are either like second time moms who have had the experience, but then they felt that there's something they were missing, you know, or they've had a negative experience in the hospital and they want to, you know, just change up the experience, you know, because at the end of the day, this whole thing of at least the baby and the mom are alive or not I don't think that should be people's gold standard for your birth experience. You know, you deserve to enjoy it. You deserve to feel good about yourself after.
Yeah.
Like, even if things don't go the way you plan, it's good to feel like, you know, yes, I did. Like, I made these choices for myself and, you know, I backed myself. But, you know, sometimes things just happen. Instead of going and feeling like, oh, I did something wrong, or my body's broken, or you've been, you know, there's a lot of cases of sexual abuse in the hospital that are not talked about, you know.
Oh,
even the whole practice of cervical checks is rooted in sexual assault of women. Like, that's simple practice, you know, and all these things are important. Like, I always ask people, like, when you're having sex, you don't invite your doctor or sex therapist there to, like, watch your positions or, you know, check if you're lubricated enough. Like, things don't go smoothly like that.
You raise a fair point. There used to be a birth center at some point before, but then...
Yeah, it was mamas, right?
Yes. But then the GAVA just like clamped on that stuff. So do you usually feel a lot of... Do you feel any type of pressure from at least a regulatory standpoint, or does that not even interfere with what you do?
I did at first because I initially wanted to be a midwife, but... Mm-hmm. To be a midwife in Kenya, I think you need to have a nursing degree first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think the two are related, or you didn't, or that you need a nursing degree to be a midwife. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, midwives are, it's a role given to you by the community. It's not something you go to school and learn, you know, or you're it's passed down. Maybe your mom was a midwife and an aunt, or your auntie, and you followed them, you know. Midwifery is an art. It's not a science, not a medical practice.
So
it took me a while to figure out how I wanted to support women.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was calling myself a doula, but I also, it doesn't resonate with me as well, because being a doula is kind of like, okay, let me just say it, because this is the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
Someone being a doula is holding someone else's hand in case they, like, to support them in case they get assaulted, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, but I don't think it's like that, but I don't think there's space for us, no? It's like a fluffer role, because if I take you to the hospital, I can't really do anything, because the role of a doula, most people say, is to advocate for you and to make your labor easier.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing was, I didn't want to attend births at the hospital, first of all, because I get really anxious, and I didn't want to transmit that anxiety to the mother. So I was like, I can't really operate in a doula role in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And even if something's going wrong, like, let's say I see them giving you an episiotomy without, like, your consent,
mm-hmm.
I can't really say anything. Or if I do, I could be kicked out of the hospital room, you know? Yeah. So it was like, I didn't know what my place would be as a doula. So for now, I'm a childbirth educator. And then maybe when I start taking births again, I will figure that out. But yeah. Do you mind if I just get into the history, like the origins of obstetrics?
Yeah.
Just for a bit of context.
Just for a bit. Yes. Sure.
Yes. So modern gynecology was basically, I don't want to say created, but spearheaded by this guy called Marion J. Sims, during a time where it was thought of as disgusting to deal with or treat women's bodies. And how he got into it was, he was a reject from all the other hospitals, all the doctors in his area. Like, he was like the joke of the community as a doctor. So he went to some village, I can't remember where, and set up a hospital for now enslaved women. Mm-hmm. And that's how he finally discovered, that's how the speculum was invented, you know? Oh, by the way, I can look inside these women's uteruses with this thing. Mm. And he would rent out these enslaved women. And mind you, they were all 16 and below. It was at a point where women were getting fistulas because they were made to give birth back to back in, like, poor settings. They're not getting exercise. They're being mistreated, blah, blah, blah. And the only reason these slave masters took them to the doctor was because it was costing them money to not have slaves working. you know.
Yeah.
So he basically experimented on these women, like multiple surgeries. There's this woman, she was not woman, the girl, she was 16. He operated on her, I think, 6 to 10 times. All of this was without anesthesia.
Oh no.
And then he would call, and he would charge all the other doctors to come to his operating room to watch. So it's like these practices that are so normalized now, the women have been convinced that they need is all, like, the basis is so, it's so dirty, you know.
Yeah.
Especially as a Black person or an African person, and you know, your body remembers this. Like, even when you're getting the cervical checks, I'm sure it feels uncomfortable.
Very.
It doesn't feel like something that should be happening, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Then as a result of cervical checks, it increases your chance of infection. Mm. And that's why they tell you now, after your water has broken 24 hours, infection increases. But that's just because they're sticking with your vagina every hour. Yeah, so they're fixing problems that they probably caused. Mm-hmm. I actually also offer like birth debriefs, because I know, like, after you give birth, the doctor doesn't usually come and sit with you and like break down what happened and how you feel about the whole process. So I offer that as a service, especially for women who've had a traumatic birth. It's just to just let out all those feelings, like cry it out, whatever you need to do to just, I guess, accept or see where you can move forward from your birth. Because, you know, it's a big experience, and to not like have it processed and hold all those feelings of, you know, failure and all of that with you.
Yeah.
It can also carry to your next birth. So yeah, I offer debrief sessions so we can break down your birth. See what, you know, you might want to do different. Because, you know, sometimes it can be hard to talk about it. True. And hard to explain, because you also don't know what you don't know. Does that make sense?
It does 100%. And actually, you've raised something very important, because sometimes you might think that you're okay with it. I mean, you both left the hospital and you are healthy and you're fine, but you don't realize that you carried some sort of trauma. And I felt it as I have recorded. I think the two moms that I talked to, and they just broke down as they were talking about it. And this is like a year later, and they're just like, I don't know why I'm crying. You know, and I'm like, maybe it's because it's the first time we've actually had to face it. And I mean, no way I qualified anyone to help you through the emotions other than just giving you a space to listen to it. Yeah. So that's it's a really cool, great and much needed service to have as part of that whole postnatal thing.
I've talked to some women who haven't been able to talk about their birth for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, even just thinking about the day would just give them hives, you know. They start shaking, they can't breathe, you know, all these symptoms or signs of panic attacks. These are just emotions that need to be moved out of your body. You know, you need to talk about them, you need to cry about it, just acknowledge them so they can pass along.
Yeah, and then you can
it's
heal.
Not it's not something you get, yeah, it's not an offer you get during postpartum usually. That 6 week checkup stresses me out so much, because they're always like, okay, fine, you healed, now you can have sex. And you're like, wait. That was like the last thing on my mind, first of all.
I remember that conversation. It was that, and then, what contraceptive do you want to go on? What blah blah. I'm like, okay, this isn't what I expected
to be
talking about when I came here. Maybe you want to tell me why, because I remember for me, by the time I went to my 6 week checkup, like, my bleeding started up again. Like, it was not like a lot of blood, and I remember I mentioned it at the end of the visit. And she was, so I was asking her, is this my period? Can my period be back really this soon? And she just looked at me and she paused. She was just like, I think it's normal. It's normal. It will happen. It might happen. But for me, I was just like, I didn't feel confident with that answer. So for the next couple of days, because it was like bright red, for the next couple of days, I was on my toes. I was just like, this doesn't seem right. I thought I was over this.
Yeah.
So it took me so long to even just understand what's happening in my body, to even it's regulating, to, you know, like, when is my cycle ever going to cut? Like, there was just so much. And I bled, I think I bled for 9 weeks, which just felt extra, to be quite honest. Where do I take this information? Who do I ask?
You know, because they don't know. They don't know either. You know, their guess isn't as good as yours.
So let's go back to your journey. Now that you're pregnant and you have received your certification, like, what, using the knowledge that you've gathered, right? So how did you prepare yourself for birth?
I think when I went, before I got pregnant, I went into thinking that I would get a midwife and I'd have a home birth and, you know, just do all of that. Honestly, I had no intentions of interacting with the hospital at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't, except for one ultrasound, which I regret to this day. Like, fuck that guy. Because I go there because, I don't know, because I hadn't gotten an ultrasound the whole time. The only thing I'd done was a pregnancy test. So now I'm feeling these kicks and I'm like, they feel like they're a bit too many.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to have like surprise twins, you know,
because
my mom's a twin.
Oh, so it was actual fear.
It wasn't even a fear. I was just like, you know what, let me not get to the day and then I think I'm done. And then there's another one. So I went there and I told him, I'm like, I just want to know that there's just one baby, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, everything's growing normally. Yeah?
Yeah.
I wanted like less than 10 minutes. That's all I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to know the gender. And then he just goes, he's like, so here's the labia. I'm like, what the fuck?
I just said I don't want. Oh, man.
So I was just like, ugh, whatever. So he shows me that. He checks the heart. I'm like, okay, can I go now? That was like my first and second. The next time I interacted with the hospital was after, which I also regret.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so for me, prenatal care looked like moving like gently. So I'd do yoga, I'd do really deep squats, and then I would when she got bigger, I was doing this like this position where I was trying to make sure she stayed head down. I would get on my knees and then kind of like a child's pose and then invert, like bend forward. So I'm kind of making sure she's being pushed like down toward my pelvis. So I think she was head down from like 28 weeks till I gave birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd check in like myself. So I'd be feeling her positions. Then I did, do you know what belly mapping is?
I have a very rough idea of it because I tried to do it. But maybe you can just describe it.
Okay, so belly mapping is basically you draw on your belly. You can have someone else do it.
Mm-hmm.
You draw on your belly and you mark now where you'd, like, let's say you'd feel the kicks and then the, like, hands. And you try and figure out, like, the position of the baby.
Yeah.
Like, using what way you've been feeling them. And also you can, like, touch yourself as well.
Mm.
And then I was measuring my fundal height to, like, make sure everything's growing, like, at the regular speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did I do? I ate really well. Oh my God. That was like, I've never eaten as well as I did when I was pregnant.
Give us like a sample diet, like a meal plan. What would you eat?
Let me not lie to you. It was chia seeds, dengu, and avocado. Those were like my three staples.
What? Doesn't sound particularly appetizing.
Sally, when I tell you, me and dengu, oh my God.
Oh, really?
I was having dengu for breakfast. Oh my God.
Oh my. How do I hate dengu?
I loved it. But you can just do any protein, even beans. Because I think my body was just stocking up on protein, fats, and then all the omegas and everything. Yeah. So I had dengu for breakfast. I was having it with bread. I was having the strangest thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was eating really well, just listening to my body. And yeah, another thing is the vitamins. I tried taking those prenatal vitamins and I couldn't. It was making my head feel like really foggy. So I just alternated to taking in those the vitamins I needed in food form, just taking it straight from the source.
Yeah.
Because another thing is, you know, the folic acid in prenatal vitamins isn't absorbable by your body. So you need, it's called methyl folate, mm-hmm. not folic acid.
Mm,
so a lot of the time, those prenatal vitamins you're taking, the folic acid isn't, like, your body can't take it in. So it's basically useless. Yeah. So like, so, yeah, so I was taking, avocados are a good, great source of folate.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, give me a second.
No, it's okay.
She's gone. yeah, so avocados are a good source of folate. I was taking fruits. What else? Yeah, just, you know, I was just doing my thing.
Yeah, being good, pregnant. Healthy diet. Yeah.
Like, it was very simple. Like,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't worried about, like, blood sugar tests, my weight, all that stuff. It was just not a reality for me. And that's another thing, yeah. A lot of these tests you go for in the hospital, you could do them yourself at home.
Mm.
You know? Like that blood sugar test.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one you can buy at the pharmacy?
Oh, for just checking your insulin levels?
So let's say maybe you like, you know, maybe you're the type of person who likes having all the information, right? Instead of going to the hospital to pay whatever it is for consultation and a test and wait there for, like, I don't know how many hours, just buy the test, do it at home, and then, you know, check it. And then even your blood pressure, because there's this thing called white coat syndrome. So basically, when you go to the hospital, you get nervous. So naturally, your blood pressure will rise.
Rise, yeah.
So now you could just, instead of going there and stressing yourself, and then, like, the information you get isn't, like, an accurate reading of you on a normal day.
Mm-hmm.
You could just do this by yourself at home. Just taking these things back into your own care. Like, yeah. All of this is, you know, you can do it. You got it.
I guess for you, since you were really into this and properly educated yourself, because I know a lot of first-time moms, you just freaked out. Just like, let somebody else. You know, we are taught to just let somebody else do that for you. But definitely you show the power of just knowledge and really diving deep and trust, especially trust, just trusting your body and yourself to be able to care for you and to know what you need. Because, you know, it's really odd. That I'm a person who trusts myself a lot, but when it came to the my pregnancy, I wasn't. But it's now showing up right now after my baby's, you know, going interacting with her and realizing it's really never that serious. It's fine. My gut will tell me if I'm doing something wrong. Otherwise, everything looks okay, you know. But I think it's a muscle you need to develop. Either intentionally, like you did, or through experience, I think, like I did.
I remember I was telling someone, oh, the baby's head down. They're like, how would you know? I'm like, it's in my body. Funny. Like, I don't believe anyone should be telling you about your body, like something about your body that you don't know. You need to practice, like, getting to know yourself. Like, if you feel something in your body, like, ask yourself where it's coming from. Like, what are you feeling when you feel those, like, that sensation, you know? Just getting in touch with yourself.
So I'll just bring these words back. Pregnancy is a state of wellness. There's so many points in this conversation that I almost felt like I was in the middle of a therapy session, at least for me and my own journey. As someone who is really preparing for a second baby, this convo could not happen soon enough, honestly. I think I will definitely sit down with her and just go through my birth experience, especially because that's the service that she provides. There's something that I'm struggling with right now. Like I've said, I am preparing for getting a second baby soon. And you know how, you know, freaked out and anxious you can be when you're a first-time mom because you just don't know how, you know, you'd give birth and how the entire process works. As someone who's already gone through that process, I'm terrified, right? Because I know exactly what will happen. I think that I'd only be doing myself justice if I could just go through that process again, relive it and debug it with Nicole and just really understand, you know, maybe where things went wrong, what I could have changed, what I couldn't have changed, what was in my power and what wasn't, you know, because once you have that in your head, you can understand that, you know what, this happened this way and maybe I can change this here. And then this one, like, honestly, there's nothing I could have done about it, especially if it was something that was making me feel bad. So I'm really looking forward for that. One big takeaway from this part of her story is like encouraging moms to be really in tune with what is going on in their bodies during pregnancy and after birth. I think it's such a transformative part of our lives and demands so much respect and awareness. Like, we can't just export that to, you know, everyone around us. That's like our partners, the doctors or midwife or doula, depending on what your journey is. But just like taking time to do the work that Nicole is talking about and just really being in tune with our bodies when we go through this intensely transformative stage, especially even after you've given birth. Honestly, like if there was something that I could single-handedly change, or, you know, just, you know, whip a wand and make everything good, is just like the postpartum journey of moms. I feel like it's one thing that we severely overlook, you know, because, I mean, yeah, there's a new baby there that requires a whole lot of attention and is new and sparkly and vulnerable and all that. But we tend to forget the mom always. But that's a story for another day. We can't go into that right now. I cannot wait for you to listen to the second part of her journey and the amazing way that she brought her super adorable baby into this world. So please check out her podcast, Back to Basics by Ruby Mamas. You can also find Ruby Mamas on Instagram. I will link everything in the show notes of this episode. All right, that's it for now. See you in the next 2 weeks for the very last episode of season 1 of Mama Tales. Bye.